Due to the graphic nature of this murder case, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes dramatizations and discussions of murder, assault, and suicidal ideation. We advise extreme caution for children under 13.
On October 29th, 1929, the Roaring Twenties came to a screeching halt. The American stock market bottomed out, beginning a chain of countless bankruptcies and widespread unemployment that would ultimately lead to the Great Depression, a period of economic stagnation where thriftiness was valued above all else.
But not everyone was ready to give up the glitz and glamour of the 20s. Even though she and her family were broke, 25-year-old Star Faithful developed a particularly expensive taste for cruise ships.
For Star, being on a cruise was like being in a different world. Prohibition made the sale and consumption of alcohol illegal, but plenty of ships still provided free-flowing booze. She could drink all she wanted, float on the water, and forget the troubles that plagued her normal life.
The ocean made Star feel alive, and yet, in a tragic twist of fate, it's also what killed her.
This is Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories, a Spotify original from Parcast. I'm your host, Carter Roy.
And I'm your host, Wendy McKenzie. Every Tuesday, we dive into the world of a real unsolved murder and try to solve the case.
You can find episodes of Unsolved Murders and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify.
This is our final episode on the 1931 death of Star Faithful. Last week, we explored Star's troubled adolescence and rebellious young adulthood. This week, we'll cover the discovery of Star's body and try to figure out what happened to the New York City party girl.
We have all that and more coming up. Stay with us.
Ready to find your next favorite podcast? Spotify makes it easier than ever to discover new favorites by previewing short audio clips before committing to a full listen. You can even watch some podcasts with video or just keep playing audio in the background. It's everything you want in one app. Music, podcasts, and audiobooks across any device. Play anytime, anywhere, any way you'd like with Spotify. Try today.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
On June 8, 1931, a man named Daniel Moriarty took his daily stroll down the sandy coast of Long Beach, New York. The tiny strip of land right off the south shore of Long Island was a trendy summer getaway at the time.
Daniel woke up early to comb the sand for forgotten trinkets and treasures. He hadn't been very lucky that morning. There were no coins and no jewelry, nothing more than a few broken seashells.
A storm the previous weekend had scared island visitors away. Without tourists, Daniel had little hope of finding anything worthwhile. Nevertheless, he kept his eyes glued to the ground.
He saw a large lump of fabric in the distance. Getting closer, he thought that perhaps a beachgoer had left their blanket on a piece of driftwood.
But then Daniel saw what looked like pale, white fingers. With horror, he realized that he'd stumbled on a body.
Daniel stared at the corpse, his eyes wide. It was a woman. She wore a silk dress, patterned in blue paisley and paired with silk stockings. Her auburn hair was tangled with sand. Her fingernails were bright red, freshly painted. She didn't have on shoes or undergarments.
Daniel crouched next to the body. The woman might have been dead, but she still deserved respect. He pulled down the bottom of her dress so her legs wouldn't be as exposed.
Then Daniel ran to two nearby beachcombers to ask for help. He was practically incomprehensible, but the men knew something bad had happened. One sprinted away to get a police officer.
Soon, Nassau County detectives swarmed the beach looking for clues. The dead woman had no purse or ID. The police had no idea who she was or what had happened to her.
That afternoon, Stanley Faithful, Star's stepfather, sat in his home in Manhattan. He sipped a cup of coffee and read the newspaper. He felt perfectly at ease, until he saw an article about an unidentified body in Long Beach.
The Faithful family hadn't heard from Star in 2 days. Star's disappearance wasn't unusual for her erratic behavior, but still the article made Stanley's stomach drop. He couldn't help but think the worst, so he traveled to Long Beach and spoke to a Nassau County detective.
Excuse me, officer. I had a question regarding the body that was found this morning.
Look, pal, the lieutenant told the press no comment, and I don't got nothing to add.
I'm not a journalist. Was the woman wearing a blue dress by chance?
How'd you know that?
Was it Paisley?
Who did you hear this from?
Oh, no. It's her.
Who?
Star. My stepdaughter. I can't believe it.
The officer took Stanley to Harold King, Nassau County's lead investigator. King showed Stanley the Paisley dress, and Stanley said he was certain it belonged to Star.
Inspector King then drove Stanley to the morgue. King lifted the sheet that covered the body, revealing the woman's face. Stanley tearfully confirmed what he already knew. His stepdaughter was dead.
With the body identified, the investigation jumped into high gear. A local doctor performed the initial autopsy. He found a small number of bruises on Star's body and a few lacerations on her liver. He wrote off the injuries as damage from floating in the ocean.
Originally, police suspected Star died of an accidental drowning or suicide. But Stanley insisted they were wrong. He swore Star wasn't suicidal. So Inspector King agreed to look into the possibility of foul play.
On June 9th, King ordered a second, more detailed autopsy. Dr. Otto Schultze, a renowned medical examiner, found signs of over 100 injuries on Star's body, including abrasions, scratches, and bruises. He also found another, even more important piece of evidence.
Mr. King, I was hoping you would stop by. Whoever it was who did that first autopsy, well, to be frank, he missed quite a lot.
Really?
Yes, there was water in the lungs, but there was also sand.
Okay. What does that mean?
When a person drowns, they breathe in water. The place Star drowned must have been very sandy. In other words, very shallow.
So she didn't say jump off a boat?
Oh, certainly not. In fact, I'd say she either fell into the ocean unconscious, or someone held her head underwater. Oh, and Mr. King, the bruises on Star's body didn't happen post-mortem. They occurred before she died. I would guess she was in a physical altercation, a fight of some kind.
The second autopsy painted a totally different picture of Star's death. According to Schultze, she appeared to have been in a fight before drowning in shallow water. Although Inspector King was still skeptical, the findings certainly seemed to suggest foul play.
The district attorney of Nassau County, Elvin Edwards, agreed. He believed Starr's death was a murder, but he needed to know more about her personal life and who might want to hurt her. So he set up an interview with Stanley Faithful.
Thank you for meeting me on such short notice, Mr. Faithful.
Of course. Anything to help the investigation.
Let's get down to it. Do you have any reason to believe Starr committed suicide?
Absolutely not. She loved life.
Did she have a bad temper?
No, not at all. We got along terrifically.
Did Starr have any close romantic attachments?
None. I can't think of a single man that Starr was close to.
Nearly everything Stanley Faithful said in the interview was a lie. He made his stepdaughter out to be a model young woman, when in reality she was moody, quick to anger, and had numerous flings with men.
Stanley might have lied because he was hiding something, or more likely, he may have just been protecting his stepdaughter's image.
In fact, Stanley made it clear that Starr was a victim. While he hid her more unsavory behavior, he was very forthcoming about one aspect of her life: her abuse at the hands of 59-year-old Andrew J. Peters.
Elvin Edwards was horrified to hear that Starr had been molested by her older cousin. He said,
"Mr. Faithful said that there had been, in the life of this girl, a man, a politician who was related to the family and lived in Boston. The man's relationship with her had been of the very worst kind, of the most sordid nature, and by virtue of the circumstances surrounding the contact between Starr as a child and this man, he believed that this man was the logical suspect as her murderer, the type of man that would be inclined to do away with her."
Edwards agreed with Stanley. Andrew was a prime suspect. It wasn't hard to believe that Starr's childhood abuser was also her killer.
The same day that Edwards interviewed Stanley, another breakthrough piece of evidence materialized.
Otto Schulze, the medical examiner, found no alcohol in Starr's system. This was strange, as she was known to drink heavily. Furthermore, her stomach contained a partially digested meal of steak, mushrooms, and potatoes. According to Schulze, the food must have been eaten 3 to 4 hours before her death.
Schulze was also surprised to discover a significant amount of Alonol in Starr's system. Alonol is a strong barbiturate drug that would make a person dizzy and sleepy at such high quantities. The sedative was rarely prescribed by doctors because it was dangerous and addictive.
This made Starr's death even more mysterious. Apparently, on the day she died, Starr hadn't had any liquor, but she had taken a powerful barbiturate.
The Alonol could account for how Starr drowned in shallow water. If she took enough of the sedative, she might have fallen unconscious. Still, it wasn't clear if Starr ingested the substance on purpose or if she was drugged.
Stanley Faithful fervently believed it was the second option. He claimed that Andrew J. Peters gave Starr sedatives like Alonol when he abused her.
With that information, Investigator King and District Attorney Edwards finally agreed that it was time to turn their attention towards the politician.
Up next, we'll learn more about Andrew J. Peters.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Etsy. Sound the gifting panic alarm. You need to get an amazing gift. Wait, no, the perfect gift. Relax. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy. Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting, so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion. It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com. Then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner or a birthday present for the pickleballer, Gift Mode has you covered. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
And now, back to our story.
On June 10, 1931, investigator Harold King and District Attorney Elvin Edwards traveled from New York to Massachusetts. They were there to scope out the primary suspect in 25-year-old Star Faithful's possible murder, her second cousin, 59-year-old Andrew J. Peters.
King and Edwards tried to keep their travel under wraps, but Andrew somehow knew they were coming. When Edwards got to his hotel room, the phone rang almost immediately.
Hello?
Is this District Attorney Edwards?
Yes.
This is Alexander Whiteside. I have reason to believe that you endeavor to interview Andrew Peters regarding a recently deceased person, Star Faithful.
I'm afraid I do not discuss police matters over the phone, even with legal counsel.
I am not Mr. Peters' lawyer. He does not need one. I am acting as his friend. He has assured me he would be glad to give any evidence he had, but he has none.
Even so, I would like to interview him tomorrow.
Mr. Edwards, a citizen from one state cannot be compelled to give evidence in a case whose jurisdiction is within another state. I trust you now understand the legal situation.
The call made it clear that Andrew wasn't going to cooperate, and it made Edwards even more suspicious. He asked Boston area police to tail Andrew. Towards the end of the evening, officers watched the politician pack a number of items from his office and speed out of town.
Despite this strange behavior, the further police looked into Andrew, the less likely it seemed that he killed Star. He was at his summer home in Maine around the time that she died.
Still, Andrew Peters was a wealthy and powerful politician. He could have paid someone to murder Star. Whether the culprit was Andrew, a hitman, or someone else altogether, Edwards was now certain that Star had been the victim of a homicide, and he was ready to go on the record about it.
Mr. Edwards, did you get any leads here in Boston? Are you certain that Star was murdered?
I am certain that she did not commit suicide. Dr. Otto Schulte is of the same opinion.
This was a marked shift. The inquiry into Star Faithful's death was officially a murder investigation.
In New York, Detective Joseph Culkin searched the Faithful residence for clues. Her bedroom was tiny, but filled to the brim with clothes and shoes. Culkin searched the pockets of all her clothing and came up empty.
Then he turned his attention to Star's bookshelf. He pulled out a collection of poems, and a small notebook tumbled off the shelf.
Culkin had hit the jackpot. It was Star's diary. As he flipped through the pages of the journal, he realized Star wasn't the girl her family made her out to be.
This is the dumbest family. Stanley's pathetic and sick. Mother's pathetic. Tucker is vicious. I got drunk with the right boy. I got horribly drunk. I certainly am a temperamental person. Yesterday I was depressed, and tonight after a rough fight with Mother, I am wildly happy. Oh, Edwin has fallen for me at last. He seemed anxious to spend another night of love. Tonight I thought how horrible it would be to get old and die. I've decided I shall never get old.
The diary revealed that Star drank heavily and was often depressed. It also confirmed that there were many men in her life, and thus many possible suspects in her murder.
According to local newspapers, Star had trysts with 19 different gentlemen between 1926 and 1929.
Extra, extra! Read all about it! Star Faithful, party girl, dozens of paramours!
Soon, Star Faithful's name was known across the globe. Her story was even featured in Time magazine.
With the increased publicity, District Attorney Elvin Edwards felt a massive amount of pressure to solve the case. And soon, He'd make news with a dramatic announcement at Starr's funeral.
On June 11th, 1931, the faithful family sat in a small chapel in Queens. Along with Starr's biological father, they were the only relatives in attendance. The rest of the pews were filled with reporters and nosy onlookers.
Starr Faithful's body lay in a brown and white casket. The reverend started reading from his prayer book, and then there was a commotion outside.
Two men burst through the chapel's doors.
"Excuse us, folks. The funeral will be postponed till further notice."
Elvin Edwards had ordered Starr Faithful's body to be returned to the morgue, stopping the memorial service in its tracks.
Edwards needed the corpse because he'd found four men who said they saw Starr on June 5th, the night of her disappearance. He needed these potential witnesses to see the body and confirm their stories.
But after taking a look, all four backed off their claims. Apparently, they'd been mistaken. Edwards had crashed the funeral for nothing. Detectives were right back where they started.
As far as investigators knew, the last person to see Starr Faithful alive was Police Sergeant Patrick Dugan. Dugan was working at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan on June 5th.
At around 10:20 p.m., Dugan saw Starr next to a stocky man who he assumed worked for Cunard Cruise Lines. According to Dugan, Starr seemed drunk. After a few moments, the stocky man put Starr in a cab and the car drove off.
No taxi driver ever came forward, despite rewards offered by the press and the police. Starr's whereabouts after 10:20 p.m. remained a mystery.
But the stocky man who worked for Cunard Cruises was an important lead. According to Starr's mother and sister, Starr was desperately in love with a ship's surgeon named Dr. George Jameson Carr. Perhaps he was the mysterious gentleman. If so, George could give investigators important information, like where Starr's taxi was headed.
But George was in Belgium on holiday. It would take several days to contact him, and many more to get him to New York for questioning.
In the meantime, the Faithful family was getting desperate, and not just for information about Starr. The Great Depression had decimated their finances, and they were looking for any way to make money. So they sold their side of the story to the New York World Telegram for $800, the equivalent of about $14,000 today.
In the article, Stanley Faithful confirmed that a Boston-area politician had abused Starr as a child. He also suggested that the powerful man was a family member. It didn't take long for the press to connect the dots to Andrew J. Peters.
Just 2 days later, Andrew suffered a nervous breakdown and was admitted to a Boston hospital. A few days later, he left the emergency room and traveled to his summer home to avoid the press. The New York Daily News reported Andrew's health crisis scandalously.
Peters collapsed completely. His nerves a wreck as the ghost of his past, the ghosts of his sordid affair with Starr, came crowding in on his memories. With his family, the former mayor of Boston is still in seclusion in North Haven. There he lies, broken, disconsolate, and inaccessible.
As the press frenzy continued, so did the investigation. On June 22, 1931, Dr. George Carr finally reached Manhattan. Inspector Harold King and District Attorney Elvin Edwards couldn't wait to question the man whose Starr had reportedly been in love with. Surely George could help them find the killer.
But George's interrogation did the exact opposite. It rekindled the theory that Starr's death was a suicide.
Perhaps the investigation had been a wild goose chase the entire time.
Up next, we explore whether Starr's death was a murder or suicide and try to solve the case ourselves.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover
inside the house there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God, this is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, starting May 8th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, back to the story.
On June 22, 1931, Dr. George Jameson Carr arrived in Manhattan on the Cunard cruise ship, the RMS Laconia.
When she was alive, 25-year-old Star Faithful was hopelessly in love with George Carr. While he didn't return her affection, he was still fond of her.
This personal connection made Dr. George Carr a person of interest in Star's murder investigation. When he stepped off the docks at Chelsea Piers, Investigator Harold King and District Attorney Elvin Edwards whisked him away to record a deposition.
Dr. Carr, can you tell us about your interactions with Star Faithful?
I met her on a number of occasions, and she often spoke of confidential matters.
Such as?
I learned of her experiences with Mr. Peters. She also told me about taking ether and hypnotic drugs. That poor girl. She said she got an enormous kick out of ether. Said it made her forget her past.
If what George said was true, it could explain the alonol found in Star's liver. Perhaps she'd taken the drug recreationally.
While George did know a suspicious number of details about Star, his alibi was airtight. He'd been at sea on the Cunard cruise ship, the RMS Franconia, several days before and after Star's disappearance.
Still, investigators hoped George could shine a light on Star's final hours. Luckily for them, George thought he knew the true identity of the stocky man.
I have heard from others in the Cunard company that Miss Faithful was at a party at Dr. Charles Roberts' cabin until late on the night of her disappearance.
Before King and Edwards could look into Roberts, George presented them with three letters he'd received from Star, written in the days preceding her death. In one letter, posted on May 30, 1931, Star wrote about her depression and her desire to die by suicide.
I'm going to end my worthless, disorderly bore of an existence before I ruin anyone else's life as well. I certainly have made a sordid, futureless mess of it all. I'm dead sick of it.
Then Star wrote about both murder and suicide in a letter she posted on June 4th, just one day before her disappearance.
If one wants to get away with murder, one has to jolly well keep one's wits about one. It's the same way with suicide. I intend to watch out and accomplish my end this time. No ether, alonol, or window jumping. I don't want to be maimed. I want oblivion.
When the press caught wind of the letters, they chalked up Star Faithful's death to suicide. Star's name vanished from tabloids as quickly as it had appeared.
But Stanley Faithful wasn't ready to move on. He alleged that the suicidal letters were forgeries. He was proven wrong, but he still believed Star had been murdered.
District Attorney Elvin Edwards also wasn't ready to close the case because there were several inconsistencies in Star's notes to George Carr. In the May 30th letter, Star had begged George to see her again, something that wouldn't be possible if she was dead. Star said she wouldn't take alonol, yet the drug had been found in her system.
Something didn't add up. So throughout the late summer and early fall, the police continued chasing leads. Tips came in nearly every day.
Most of the information led to dead ends. At various times, Star was rumored to be a call girl, a gangster's girlfriend, and a burlesque dancer. None of this gossip actually got officers closer to the truth.
In October of 1931, police got a possible break in the case. Investigators interviewed several witnesses who claimed to have seen Star Faithful on June 6th, one day after her disappearance. These informants were sure Star had been at Tapp's Hotel in Island Park, New York.
Island Park is right next to Long Beach, where Star's body was found. Even more intriguing, Tapp's Hotel was a known hangout for many of New York City's top gangsters.
The hotel owners claim they saw a man get rough with Star Faithful before they both disappeared from the bar. Others corroborated the story, but no one was willing to go on record about the man's identity.
Investigators suspected that it was Vanny Higgins, a notorious bootlegger and gangster who supplied Taps with illicit liquor. In interviews, police tried to get workers to rat on Vanny.
Mr. Berg, what can you tell me about this man you saw with Star Faithful?
I don't want to get mixed up in a murder scandal.
Can you at least confirm you saw Star?
Sure, but I'd be of no use in your case. I'm not testifying to nothing.
Are you afraid of Vanny Higgins, Mr. Berg? Is that why you're being so cagey?
Of course not! I'm not afraid of any man.
As hard as they tried, investigators couldn't get anyone to go on the record. If Vanny Higgins was somehow involved in Star's death, he'd scared every witness into silence.
Ultimately, police dropped the Tapp's Hotel angle. Nobody would talk. Plus, officers had no idea why Star would have gone to Island Park, or how she might have gotten there.
With no fresh leads, the investigators returned to an old one. On December 7th, 1931, the police finally questioned Dr. Charles Roberts. According to George Carr, Roberts was with Star on the evening of her disappearance.
It's unclear why it took investigators several months to interview Roberts, especially considering that his testimony closed the case for good.
How did Star appear on that Friday, June 5th?
She seemed much the same as usual. She was always sort of, what shall I say, unhappy. I think her affair with George Carr was in the back of her mind. She was anxious to go to Paris, to get away from it all.
Did she ask you to help her stow away?
Oh, no, not at all.
Is there anything else you can recollect from your Friday conversation?
She talked about a ship, the Ile de France. Thinking it over, I'm sure she had a date there at 10 o'clock. She was going to a party on board. The ship was sailing that night to Havre, I think. That's the shortest way of getting to Paris.
What did you two have for dinner that night?
We had boiled eggs and ham sandwiches. And either milk or coffee.
No meat, mushrooms, or potatoes?
No.
Was she influenced by some drug when she left you?
Not that I observed, no.
Now, upon her leave-taking, you escorted her to a taxi?
Yes. It was just after 10 p.m. I did not give any address to the taxi man, and I did not hear what she said to him. That's the last I ever saw of her. I'm sure it was in her mind to go to the Ile de France.
Robert suggested Star was desperate to get to Europe. The police also knew that Star had tried to stow away on a cruise ship before. From those two facts, District Attorney Edwards concocted a new theory.
The DA's office theorized that Star had stowed away on the Ile de France. She emerged from her hiding spot delirious from Alonol she'd taken recreationally. Somewhere on the waters off Long Beach, she'd gone to the edge of the ship and either jumped or fallen to her death.
This theory was never publicized, but it was enough to satisfy police. On December 7th, 1931, the inquiry into Star's death was closed.
But while Edwards accepted the Ile de France theory, this explanation for Star's death was extraordinarily flimsy.
During the investigation, police questioned several crew members and passengers on the Ile de France. No one remembered seeing Star Faithful.
There was also a major issue with the theory's timeline. The Ile de France departed from Manhattan at 10 p.m. the same time Star ended her visit with Roberts. She couldn't have stowed away on the ship in mere minutes.
The geography also made no sense. The Ile-de-France was docked right next to Dr. Roberts' ship. Star wouldn't have needed a taxi for a 2-minute walk.
Lastly, it's unclear where Star would have gotten the Alonol that was in her system when she died, and when she would have had time to eat steak and potatoes. It's hard to believe she had a sit-down meal while stowed away on a ship.
Clearly, this explanation was insufficient, and a lot of people knew it. Morris Markey, a writer at The New Yorker, had his own theory, one based on Star's tumultuous sex life.
It is not too fantastic to suggest that on the final day of her life, Star allowed herself to be picked up by an attractive stranger, and that she agreed to his suggestion that they go to Long Beach. I think they did not go to a room, but found a lonely spot on that almost endless stretch of shadowed sand. She discarded all her clothing except the thin silk dress. And then, I think, she teased this unknown man beyond endurance. He mauled her, perhaps into unconsciousness. Then he was frightened because he had mauled her and decided that she would never tell of it. So he took her down to the water's edge and held her head under.
Besides Star's body being found in Long Beach with no undergarments, there's not much evidence to back up Markey's hypothesis. Although if Markey was correct, Star's death was a tragic repetition of the sexual violence of her youth.
Jonathan Goodman, the author of The Passing of Star Faithful, also proposed an elaborate theory to explain her death. Goodman believes Star had been the victim of a blackmailing scheme gone wrong.
Star was abducted, driven to Island Park to Tapp's Hotel, the favorite watering place of the Vanny Higgins gang. Star was treated quite well at first. She was given a meal and was provided with Alonol. She was told she had no need to be frightened. Once she had dished the dirt, every speck, on Andrew Peters, she would be driven back to Manhattan. She talked. But Vanny Higgins was not satisfied, and so Vanny Higgins tried to beat the truth out of her.
Goodman's hypothesis had some supporting clues. Rumor had it that a Boston-area gang had blackmailed Andrew Peters out of $30,000. If that was true, it stands to reason that a New York gangster like Vanny Higgins might want in on a blackmailing scheme of his own.
Plus, multiple witnesses claim to have seen Star Faithful in Island Park at Tapp's Hotel the night after her disappearance. The only problem is, none of these bystanders agreed to go on the record.
So, to this day, Star's death remains an enigma. It might have been a terrible accident, a tragic suicide, or a cold-blooded murder.
With all the available evidence, I think Star's abusive cousin, Andrew J. Peters, was responsible for her death. Star knew he was a predator, which made her a threat to his political career. Even though he was in Maine at the time of her death, he still could have orchestrated her murder.
I'm not so sure. I think the theory that Vanny Higgins' gang was involved makes more sense. They hung out in Tapp's Hotel, and multiple witnesses saw Star there. The gang could explain a lot. They might have treated Star to a steak dinner and given her Alonol to gain her trust and get information about Andrew Peters. Then, when they had enough information for political blackmail, they might have killed Star to keep her from ratting out their scheme.
Whatever the truth about her death may be, Star Faithful's life was defined by a tragic cycle of abuse. Beginning when she was just 11 years old, she was molested by her adult cousin. She could never fully heal from the physical and psychological trauma that Andrew Peters inflicted on her.
Whether she died by accident, suicide, or murder, Star's heavy drinking, drug abuse, and eventual death can be linked to this early victimization.
She deserved better from start to finish.
Thanks again for tuning into Unsolved Murders. We'll be back next Tuesday with a new episode.
For more information on Star Faithful, amongst the many sources we used, we found The Passing of Star Faithful by Jonathan Goodman extremely helpful to our research.
You can find all episodes of Unsolved Murders and all other Spotify originals from Parcast for free on Spotify.
We'll see you next time.
If we live till next time.
Unsolved Murders True Crime Stories is a Spotify original from Parcast. Executive producers include Max and Ron Cutler. Sound design by Michael Langsner, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Trent Williamson, Carly Madden, and Freddie Beckley. This episode of Unsolved Murders was written by Matt Hartman, with writing assistance by Karis Allen and Giles Hofseth. Fact-checking by Cheyenne Lopez, and research by Mickey Taylor. The amazing cast of voice actors includes Joe Hernandez, Cameron Nikod, Albert Park, Ellie Schiff, and Jen Wong. Unsolved Murder stars Wendy McKenzie and Carter Roy.